Measures Radio Network, the voice of the 3%, is now on the air.
Guns, self-defense, survival, current events, and your future.
Can't take me.
We're rapidly approaching desperate times. Have you prepared your family physically, mentally, spiritually to face these times? Tyrant has overstepped his authority. What will you do when he comes to your door?
You can't take me.
The Shooting Bench, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Central.
It's easy to take liberty for granted when you've never had it taken from you. Hi, this is Amy Reynolds inviting you to come see what it's like living way out here, new on Just Measures Radio. We'll talk about cooking, canning, gardening, and homemaking, along with storytelling and nostalgic journeys to yesteryear.
Join Amy every Monday through Thursday morning right here on Just Measures Radio Network for Living Way Out Here, 8 to 9 a.m. Pacific, 10 to 11 Central. Don't miss it.
And what I wouldn't give to ride in that old truck with him. If heaven wasn't so far away, I'd pack up the kids and go for the day and introduce them to their grandpa.
Come. Hurricanes, tornadoes, western firestorms, earthquakes, financial collapse, government upheaval. What happens when Walgreens closes? Who do you turn to? You turn to Kat Ellis and myself, Chuck Hudson, on the Medi-Chat and learn how combat medicine and alternative herbal remedies can help keep you going no matter what. The Medi-Chat, live 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern on the Just Measures Radio Network.
Yeah, my only hope was Betty Lou. She was the one. A combination AK-57 Uzi Raider laser triple barrel double scoped heat seeking shotgun.
Nobody knew where he came from. They only knew he came in.
Uh-oh, here he comes again. Here's Cope with the Shooting Bench.
I still remember these words. Oh, it's plain that you're looking for trouble. Trouble's what I try to shun. If that's what you want, then that's what you'll get. 'Cause cowboy, we're both packing guns.
You know what's good for you. Stay tuned for 100% Gun Talk, coming up right now.
44 spoke, and he sent letting smoke. 17 inches of flame. Oh, the big one had never cleared leather. Beaten before he could start. A little round hole had appeared on his shirt. The bullet went clear through his heart.
The views expressed in the following broadcast are not necessarily those of Just Measures Radio or the owners or sponsors thereof. Any and all mention of laws, ordinances, or policies are not to be construed as legal advice or necessarily all-inclusive. The listener bears all responsibility in verifying this information. We advise that this broadcast may be inflammatory to those with thin skin, limp wrists, and room temperature IQs. Furthermore, the statements expressed by the host may contain information known to the state of California to inspire free thinking and may promote unexplained growth of testicles and backbone. Listener discretion is advised.
All righty, here we come, sliding into home base again. Just walked in here about 15 minutes ago, and we're at Schott's Ranch tonight. And we're hoping that our internet connection holds up, and we'll be able to continue to do the show. So it is the 19th of June, and of course it's a Thursday. Tonight's the all gun-related version of the shooting bench. And so here's the deal. If you guys want to talk about guns, you got two choices. You're going to have to ask some questions on the chat, or you're going to have to call me, because I've been running like a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest all day long and haven't got things prepared properly. So that's the way it's going to be. We'll open up the phone lines here in just a few minutes. And otherwise, we'll just all go get ice cream and go sit on the edge of the bed and watch a movie or something. But there, hello, Minnie. Let's see, old junkies, good to see you in here. Let me see who all is in here tonight before we get too carried away here. Concrete and Desert Rat, good to see you in here. Peanut Rider, Texas Sheepdog, and our bunch of our usuals there. So, Minnie, I would be absolutely delighted to go over that again. I can't tell you how happy that would make me to go over that again. Absolutely. Give us just a couple of minutes here, and we'll go over that. As a matter of fact, we up here at Schott's Ranch, we've only got, I think, one class to do. That's yet to be seen, because we may have some people Saturday that decide they wanted to extend their education on Sunday, so it's available for them, but right now there's nothing scheduled. So we got one class, got some work to do, some things to do to the classroom. It's a never-ending deal up here to keep things going like they should. Hey, good news, though, and I think I told y'all about this the other night, but it's better news now. We've got our solar working 100%, apparently. And haven't started a generator here now in what, Jason, a week? Almost. Yeah, almost a week we haven't started the generator. And they've been working in here through the day with fans on and everything else. So we are just like rich folks up here now and have got regular electricity. So that's very good. Hopper, I hope your computer issues are not due to our end. We're hoping that everything runs well up here. So far, it seems to be doing all right. We have, let me look and see and make sure both servers are playing. They both seem to be running okay. So, all right. If it gets bad, we'll shut one or the other of them off. And one of the things we've learned up here is that if everybody else stays off their cell phones and turns their Wi-Fi off, then we don't have any or as bad issues. And usually it runs pretty good. So, anyhow, on the rimfire deal, we can probably draw this out for a little bit because there's a lot of what ifs here and a lot of exceptions, and some very hard fast rules. But we had a 22 up here. Last weekend or weekend before last, we had a 22 in here that the firing pin had been mushroomed and no, it wasn't the firing pin either. It was the chamber itself. So inside of the cylinder of this revolver, right at the top, as the cylinder would be in the firing position, the top of that chamber, guy brought it in here and couldn't get it to feed. He was very disappointed in that. He couldn't get the shells in when he fired. He couldn't get them out. Well, what it was is they were dragging on the top because someone had dry-fired it a lot, and not being a real high-quality gun to start with, the cylinder had peened it a little bit at the top right where the firing pin hits it. Because the firing pin, naturally, by its very nature of its name there, rimfire, hits where the rim of the 22 is, not in the center like a 9mm or 30-06 or whatever. So, with repeated dry firing, it has made it a little out of round at the top, and the shells couldn't couldn't get in there. No, it didn't actually mushroom it. If it would have been the firing pin, it probably would have mushroomed it. But it peened a hole out in the top of the cylinder, and it would be kind of the reverse, the exact opposite of mushrooming. It was a divot that was instead of folding a point around like a mushroom, it made a hole in it and forced a little burr to come out there. But at any rate, it was pretty easy to fix. The long-term solution is don't dry fire cheap guns like that. Some rim fires you can do that, and you can do it quite a bit. Others, you can do it moderately. Others, you don't want to do it at all. The Ruger revolvers, both double action and single action, made after 1973 with the transfer bar safety in it, you can dry fire those all you want to. Till the cows come home, you will never ever live long enough to hurt it any. Before that, it was just as subject to have a problem as any other revolver. It was just built a lot better, and you could probably do it more and get away with it from time to time, where these cheaper ones didn't take very much. Now, I've got, I don't know how many Ruger Mark IIs I got now. I think I'm down to three. One, two, three. Three, maybe four. And a couple of those, well, one of them right now in particular I've had since, I don't even remember when I got that thing. It was way back when I was still in the Army in California. No, it was before that. It was in, it was before I joined the Army, so I've probably had it since about 81, early 82, somewhere in there. I couldn't begin to guess how many thousands and thousands and thousands of rounds that thing's had through it. I've dry fired it hundreds and hundreds of times, and I've never had any type of an issue with it, with any of them. But now that doesn't mean I'm not telling you that I think it's a, thank you, Jason. It doesn't mean that I'm telling you it's a good idea to do that. It just means that maybe I was just lucky. But I've dry fired it many, many times. But that holds true with rifles, semi-automatics, revolvers, whatever. Some are built a little bit differently and have a little bit of room at the top that will allow more of that than others. Generally speaking, if you always want to be careful and give somebody good advice, you just tell them you don't dry fire rim fires. Like I said, there are some very notable exceptions to that that you can do from now on, but others not so much. And the same can be said for center fires, not for different reasons though, because obviously the firing pin hitting in the center of the chamber, or not hitting in the center of the chamber because there's nothing to hit there. A couple of things can go wrong, particularly with the older guns. Again, everything with a transfer bar safety in it is not a concern and does not belong in this conversation. Some of those will include Taurus, Ruger. Several other revolvers have copied Ruger. They were the first one in 1973 to come out and with the transfer bar safety. And the hammer, top of the hammer, hits dead against the frame, and it just doesn't hurt it. Doesn't hurt anything. I suppose if you put it on a machine that would dry fire it, 75 million times over the course of a week, then, there may be some early wear there. But I don't think the average person can really hurt that thing by dry firing it. Now, I'll say that any gun, after just saying what I said about the revolvers, almost any gun out there, eventually, it is a mechanical device, eventually something can fail. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad for it or that it would have failed earlier than as if you had been shooting it. Shooting it applies more pressure, more violence, more heat, it very well could be more likely to fail after shooting it than dry firing it, depending on the model. Others, maybe not so much. A couple of things that could come about from dry firing some revolvers is your firing pin may eventually crystallize and break. Springs wear out. I mean, there's just several things that might happen. Your Freedom Arms revolvers, they tell you in no uncertain terms, do not dry fire. The tolerances are so close and so tight in that gun, they tell you do not dry fire that thing at all. So if it's that sensitive about it, why do I want to pay that damn much for something when I can get a Ruger and practice and dry fire it once in a while? So, excuse me. Another revolver problem. And like I said, it's not really a problem because, eventually everything wears out a little bit. If you dig enough holes with a shovel, it's going to wear out and you're going to have to get another one. If you have your revolvers with the firing pin in the, mounted in the hammer, in the nose of the hammer there. So what happens with that one is that it is trying to jump forward. It's being stopped abruptly. And since it's not actually a molded integral part of the hammer, actually some of them are. Some of your old Colt Peacemakers and stuff like that, there was a lot of old revolvers that with the hammer was made, the firing pin was made as part of the hammer. But some of the, as time went on, they changed that to where the firing pin was attached with a little pin in the hammer. And now all the impact and force was either taken by a combination of that little pin and or the hole that was drilled through the firing pin that was holding it in there. So will it wear out eventually? Absolutely. It will crack right where that little hole is, where the pin goes through. Will it happen quickly? Absolutely not. It takes a while for it to do it. But so what? You know, they cost, you know, $9, $10, $12, and you replace it whenever you think you need to and continue to march. Dry practice is a wonderful thing, and we should do that. People will report different stories about dry practicing with their guns, and they'll come in, and maybe, you know, just like cars or Coke bottles or anything else that's mass manufactured, once in a while you come up with someone that's, you know, out of spec or a little lower quality than the rest of them for some reason or another. But we have seen in our classes and classes that we've been to with other people, literally, I wouldn't say hundreds of thousands, but I'd say $10,000 to $20,000, maybe. People that dry fired over and over and over and over, not only in the class, but in between classes, in between training sessions and everything. And it is so very rare. In quality guns in these classes, I have never, ever seen anything go wrong with them. That's not to say that it hasn't, you know, at home or something when we didn't hear about it, didn't know about it. But overall, not an issue. We see people dry firing 1911s, Glocks, Berettas, Rugers, AR-15s, AKs, M1As, and Mini 14s, all manner of semi-automatic firearms. And I shouldn't even say that. We dry fired when I went and took several different rifle classes. Some of them I took with bolt action guns, and I dry fired those many, 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 many times. And no problem, even to this day, still, same firing pin, same spring, same bolt, same everything still worked flawlessly. So now, with all that being said, we're talking about modern guns. Hey, Doc, thank you. I'm glad you made it back. We're talking about modern guns. So back in the old days, there was quite a bit of difference, both because of the metallurgy of the gun and various factors in the manufacturing of the gun, the way the things fitted and all that. It was very much a no-no, quite taboo back in the old days. But modern, let's just pick one of our classes. Other classes will be different, but I don't know of anybody, any professional firearms trainer that doesn't have their students dry practice substantially. So much so that you guys have heard about our Glock dry practice kit that we've invented. And you put this in the gun so that, now obviously if you put the kit in there, it takes 100% of the stress off of the gun. So we're not saying, what I'm saying is that for dry practice, it is so important that people have bought these things by the hundreds. And right now we are in the process, as we sprecken at this very moment, of getting the parts and everything to fulfill an order for 40 of these that are going to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And hopefully we'll be able to get that out by the end of next week, first of the month at the latest. And we've sold them in 17 countries. We've sold them in Switzerland and I don't even remember. We sent some to Taiwan, England, Germany, Canada, all over the place, and every state in the union. So that's how important a dry practice is. The only thing that these kits do is that they allow you to press the trigger repeatedly without racking the slide on the Glock. But other than that, everything else is the same on the gun. So, I was going to tell you, what was I going to say? Oh, we were thinking about, let's just pick one of our classes. Let's pick a one-day defensive hand in a single day. The average time amount of dry presses on your functional operational firearm, rifle or handgun, shotgun too, as far as that goes. Probably more so with the handgun. Let's say probably 100 and 200 times a day. Probably 125, 150 somewhere times a day of dry presses on your gun. So if you multiply that times a three-day class, we're looking at 450 dry presses in one single three-day weekend. And I know if you go out to certain other schools, you'll do it at least twice that much. So not too much to be seriously concerned about with modern firearms with dry practice. Now, what was I? I was looking at something. Oh, snap caps. I see a couple of guys have mentioned snap caps up here. I'll tell you what happens. It depends if you're just recreationally shooting and you feel uncomfortable about it. Yeah, you can use snap caps. The problem, and we've actually seen this happen, not only have we advised against it, we have actually seen this happen. And that is the fact that you may wind up at some point because of fatigue. Now, maybe not this week, maybe not next month, maybe not till a year or 5 years from now. but the possibility still exists of mixing up your ammo with the snap cap. And either way, if you have a snap cap and a magazine of live ammo and the bad guy comes, you may wind up screwing up there. If you have a live round in a magazine full of snap caps or something, and then you could mess up even worse. So we have always advised, and most places do advise against the use of snap caps, except in a fine over and under or something when you want to drop the firing pin for long-term storage or something, which is kind of dumb too, but people do it. We had some Special Forces guys. I think I've told you this story before. Had some Special Forces guys at a previously, how would I put it, not to be mentioned firearms training facility about 250 miles from here. But at any rate, we mentioned this to them. And, of course, being high-speed, low-drag ninja warriors, they said, oh, well, no, we are professionals. We would never do that. We're smarter than that. We're not going to mix up our ammo. The next day, after this little discussion and some practice drills and stuff, the next day, of course, they loaded up and went about their way and went to the town and eat, went to bed, dry practice, whatever it was they did. The next day, 3 of the 8 showed up with snap caps and magazines of live ammo after we just talked about it. And that's enough right there, even if that's the only time that I ever see it happen, and so far it is. We've always knew that the possibility existed and tried to discourage people from doing that. But if that's the only time that I see it happen, that's enough for me, considering the caliber of the people and the training that they've already had and everything else. Then that still, I think, is a relatively, it's an issue that needs to be considered either way. Yeah, Peanut Rider, good advice. Never, ever, ever dry fire during commercials on TV, any commercials on TV, any TV period. You don't use TV for a dry practice target. Very poor idea. There's been lots and lots of dead TVs because of those mistakes. We've had people actually in our classes, we had, I don't remember how many, probably out of 2,500, 3,000 people that we did in all of our classes together before we ever left New Mexico. Probably somewhere between 6 and 10 admitted to shooting their TVs. But with it's just a very, very bad idea. I won't go so far as to call it stupid, because if someone hasn't been advised of the possible dangers of that, it's like so many other things, they don't know what they don't know. And until it happens, or until somebody points it out to them. Now, if somebody's pointed it out to them, and they say, like those high-speed, low-drag ninja warriors, they say, well, no, I would never do that because I'm too cool and I'm too smart, and that would never happen to me. And then they blow their TV up, then they're stupid, and they deserve everything they get, as long as nobody gets hurt. So, anyway, we've managed to make it through the first half hour here, so give me a few minutes and
I'll be back.
Hi, this is Amy Reynolds inviting you to come see what it's like living way out here, new on Just Measures Radio. We'll talk about cooking, canning, gardening, and homemaking, along with storytelling and nostalgic journeys to yesteryear.
Join Amy every Monday through Thursday morning right here on Just Measures Radio Network for Living Way Out Here, 8 to 9 a.m. Pacific, 10 to 11 Central. Don't miss it.
And what I wouldn't give to ride around in that.
truck with him. If heaven wasn't so far away, I'd pack up the kids and go for the day and earth is near their grandpa.
Come.
Join us every Sunday for the Medic Shack.
The Emperor has been expecting you.
With your host, Chuck Hudson.
You know what the chain of command is? It's a chain I go get and beat you with till you understand who's in running command.
Cat Ellis.
You're having far too much fun at my expense.
And our producer, Jacob Hudson.
Who is this genius?
Sundays, 7 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern, with Just Measure Radio Network.
Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern on Just Measures Radio. Don't miss it. Join Cope for two full hours of political incorrectness, current events, gun talk, and so much more.
Now you listen to me.
Who the hell are you?
You know. You all know exactly who I am. Say my name.
You what? I don't have a damn clue who the hell you are.
Yeah, you do.
That's right.
Now, say my name.
John Galt on the Teotihuacan Radio Show, live Friday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Just Measures Radio Network.
There was 40 feet between them when they stopped to make their play. And the swiftness of the Ranger is still talked about today. Texas red and not cleared leather for a bullet fairly ripped. And the Ranger's aim was deadly with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip.
Wow, that was a short break. We didn't get back here in time, though. All right. Is there anything we did not cover about dry firing? Let's see here. I think that pretty well does it. And I was looking at one of my catalogs. And by the way, the phone lines are open, or if you have questions you want to put in the chat room or something, well, just knock yourself out. We were looking here at a, let's see. Here we go. There's a pistol in here made by SIG. Hold on just a second. Sound is back because I'm back. It was my fault for not getting back. No, it's not a 226. It's a PM400. It looks like a solution to a non-existent problem. It's $1,070. No, it's more than that. No, that's not the right one. It says see website for details, so I'll have to see website for details. This PM400, they call it a SWAT pistol. With pistol stabilizing brace. Now, what this brace does, it looks, for all the world in this black and white picture, looks like any other shoulder stock. But what it's designed for, since it is still actually designed to be fired with one hand, and I don't know why the ATF is allowing this to happen, but they are, and they have issued a ruling on it that says it's okay. So this deal goes back and wraps over or supports your arm, on your arm, so that you have for whatever reason, I don't know. But some people actually are using it for a buttstock to bring it up real close to you. But that doesn't change the fact, they said that it doesn't, they can't regulate how the end user uses something. It is how it is designed. Okay? That absolutely conflicts with what they've said before, because there's been a couple of prosecutions that we know of. I have one of them on video, where someone has had a dirty or malfunctioning gun or something that caused it to double or triple, you know, or go full auto because it malfunctioned, and it wasn't in the design. Neither is this gun in the design for it to be a shoulder stock, but people are using it that way. But they say that's okay because it wasn't in the design. But these other prosecutions, one of them was with I'm pretty sure it was an AR. I'm almost positive it was. And it doubled or tripled on him, and they told him to get it off the range, and ATF found out about it. And they actually prosecuted this guy. It's a semi-automatic weapon. They proved it. There was nothing, no out-of-spec parts, no modified or aftermarket parts or anything like that. It was simply, you know, a combination of being dirty and wore out. And hang on a minute. We got some stuff going on in Texas. I can share a little bit of this with you a little bit later. But All right, interesting stuff. I'll have to share that with you in a little while. I'll have to pick it apart a little bit and share just what I can. But let's see. What did we see up here? So just what is this? Some side of new bump fire accessory? No, it's not a bump fire accessory at all. It's nothing but a stabilizer that wraps around the wrist and helps you to, well, I don't know if it helps you do a damn thing or not, but since it's a long and heavy type gun, then it makes it where you can fire it more comfortably with one hand. And since it was in fact designed to be shot with one hand, then it's perfectly legal in spite of what you might choose to use it for later. So let me see. I'll tell you what I'm going to do because I am an awesome dude. These things are $1,149 at this one particular deal here. Let's see if I can put a picture of this in the chair. We go. Damn, I'm good. Huh? It's listed on the 6 Hours website, is that? Let's see, I've got a nice big picture here, and I'm trying to figure out how to get this loaded up here for you. Well, let me just do it this way. I'll copy image location, and I'll stick this in the chat room, and you guys can mull over it and see what you think about it here. You know, that's not going to work. Let's see what happens when you click on that. Okay, that takes you to a little bitty tiny picture of it. So I'll tell you what, let's see if I can do this some other kind of way here. See if I can do something real ingenious here. I've got a nice full big picture here. Open link, save link, copy link location. Okay, here's a picture of the stock alone. Just the very, well, I shouldn't say stock, of the stabilizer. Okay, that second one is the stabilizer itself. Now, this is a handgun made by Sig Sauer. It's got an 11-inch, it's 11-inch 223. And if any of you are entertaining notions of getting something like this, let me explain to you, let me try to explain to you how absolutely, indescribably, unbelievably loud a 223 is out of a short barrel. It is something that if you've never experienced it before, there's no reason to start now. It is devastating, to say the least. I wish I could get this full picture in here. It's not going to work. Okay, well, poop. Let's see if we can get another angle of it here. That's just the other side. Big deal. Anyhow, what we were talking about here is this. It looks like a stock if you look from the side, but if you look at that picture real close, you'll see that that thing rests over the top of your arm, and you tighten that strap up on there. I reckon so nobody take it away from you. Actually, since it clips onto the top of your arm instead of coming up from underneath, you need the strap is what holds, what gives you the balance for it being so front heavy. That's going to be real hard to shoot with one hand if you don't have some way to keep it from being so front heavy. So that strap puts a lot of that weight back further on your arm. But obviously you can look at that and tell how easy it would be to actually use that as a buttstock. Yeah, of course you use lose velocity. An 11-inch barrel, you're going to lose, you know, if you go with just legal length at 16 inches, you could lose as much as, you could lose as much as 250 feet per second. So, let's see. Now, that varies a little bit. I was using, with my 223, I had a 12-inch 223 in a contender. And I believe I was getting 27 or 28 out of that. And it was so absolutely, incredibly, miserably loud. I said, you know what? If I'm going to keep this, something's going to have to happen. So I loaded it up with some Blue Dot pistol powder and got the velocity down to about 2,300 feet a second. And I want to tell you what, that was a remarkably accurate round out of that contender. It was extraordinary. I lost a lot of velocity, but it was... you know, more than a 22 Magnum out of a rifle, not the modern 22 Magnum rounds, because they didn't have any back then. They had the 40s, and that's it. So yeah, Hopper, your arm goes through it. It actually doesn't. You could stick your arm through it, or you unbuckle the belt there, snap it onto your arm, and then wrap the belt on there. So that's, yeah, either way, what you're saying would be right. So, but if the same round that you, out of a 16-inch barrel, was, 30, well, you're not going to get 3,200 feet a second out of a 16-inch barrel. You're probably going to get 28. somewhere in that neighborhood, depending on the weight of the bullet and everything. So on the average, depending on load and gun and several other factors, if it was, well, that's an old one, isn't it?
22-23, April of 1990.
What's wrong with that?
Well, we're thinking that, you know, somewhere around 92 is when they were hitting the markets.
Oh, at the 23s?
Mm-hmm. The 22 and the 23.
I don't know. We'll have to look and see. What was I saying now? I forgot. We're talking about something here, and I'll get sidetracked. His aviator. We were talking about the amount of velocity lost. On the average, most guns you're going to get somewhere between 35 and 50 feet per second, either loss or gain, with per inch of barrel either subtracted or added. That's not a hard, fast rule, but it's a pretty good average. So let's just say worst case scenario, you get 50 feet off of it, and you're taking 5 inches off of there, you're going to be down to, let's see, it'd be 250 feet off of it, so you're going to be down to 2650 or somewhere there about, no, 2550. So you're getting, now not that it still wouldn't do the job, it's obviously in a handgun, 11-inch handgun, and an AR, you're probably looking at closer range stuff. It would be a good, executive protection gun, a good close range CQB gun in buildings and stuff. It would be much less useful out in the field, in the jungles and deserts and stuff like that. But in buildings and vehicles and stuff like that, yeah, it's probably could be useful for that. But if I were going to do that, because of the velocity loss, I would probably want to go with an AK pistol. It's going to be about the same size. I don't have to worry about the stupid buffer tube back there in the back, which is what allows them to do that. And I suppose that you could probably make some kind of a similar doohickey on there on an AK the same way. But if I'm going to neuter that 223 that much, I would certainly rather go with a 30 caliber. And we have chronographed those, and we're only losing about 200 feet because those were still over 2,200 feet a second with 125 grain 30 caliber bullet. So that is substantially more poop than a 55 or a 62 grain, 68 grain bullet going, a 22 caliber bullet going 2,250. So I'm not sure what the other than the fact that it says high speed ninja SWAT warrior tactical cotton picker on it. Well, they Well, I don't know. Let me go see. I doubt it. But if they did, it would probably not be a. Let's see here. Designed for use in law enforcement, military operations, or the sporting field, as well as competitive shooting. Or not. The SIG M400 is a true AR platform tactical pistol. Provides unparalleled accuracy with an 11-inch chrome line and phosphate-coated barrel that provides maximum durability and corrosion resistance. A 7075 T6 aircraft-grade aluminum lower receiver adds to the durability and reliability. Direct impingement gas operating system with rotating locking bolt, 5.556, two-piece, accepts most AR-15 magazines, A2 flash suppressor. The pistol stabilizing brace, the SB-15 pistol stabilizing brace, dramatically improves the single-handed performance of the buffer tube-equipped pistols. fits all pistols equipped with an AR-style buffer tube. ATF compliant, veteran designed, made in the USA, quick and easy to install. The ATF has reviewed this product and determined that attaching the SB-15 to a firearm does not alter the classification of the firearm or subject the firearm to NFA control. So there you have it. But it does not list the velocity here anywhere. But so there's the deal on that. Let me check. Is this breaking news? No, this is bull stuff. All right, let me get back over here to the chat room. Yeah, Mountain Shooter, that's pretty much it. And, there's probably, like I said, no, I just thought of something. I'm sorry I said that. Is it something that would be useful in a CQB type scenario? I'm not so sure that I would want to have my hand tied up so completely that, now, granted, it probably helps with retention. If somebody gets a hold of it, it just means that they can, break your arm before they take it away from you or something with it. But if you're wounded or need to switch hands or do something with the hand, you got to unbuckle it, slide it off there, and then do something with it before you can use it again. So I'm not sure that there's a real good useful purpose for that. If I was going to use something, all you need is 5 more inches to make it a legal rifle. I think I would rather have a collapsed buttstock with, a buttstock that is collapsible and have it sucked up tight if I wanted the compactness to get it in a CQB environment. I don't know that 5 inches of barrel is that big of a deal breaker. I'm just trying hard to wrap my mind around what you would do with this and make it practical. I'm sure that somebody has come up with some big fighting manual for this, trying to sell these guns. But I think even though it says for law enforcement, military, and that, it's probably more for the keyboard commando is what I'm thinking, the way it's designed there. I just can't see a real good use for it. With as far as retention goes, if somebody gets a hold of it and it's strapped to you, I don't know. It just doesn't sound like a good idea to me. I'm just not. I'm sure that that's one of the points that they use to sell it, but I'm not sure that they would be able to sell it to me by using that point. But, oh well, let's see. What do we got here in the chat room? To Tinker, you're probably right. Doc says the next thing they'll be selling a tactical strap-on pogo stick to make dynamic entries through windows. You know what, Doc? Build it and they will come. You design something like that and make a video and make it work just one time. Even they don't have to know that the window seal is only 8 inches off the ground. So that would, you make it work one time, and I'll guarantee you'll sell a million of them in the first month. People will buy it because it's tactical. You say it's tactical, they're going to know it's tactical. Paint it black, call it tactical, and it will sell. The polishing media that I use Walnut Mountain Shooter. I'll use corn cob if I have to, if I can't find any walnut. I'd much rather use crushed walnut shells. Now, I'll tell you what I did back in the day when I was selling Melaleuca stuff. They had a product called What the heck was it? It was kind of a red colored tub and tile, some kind of tub and tile cleaner is what it was. And it was damn good stuff. It worked really well. And you'd put about a tablespoon or so of that stuff in your media and mix it up and run your shells through it, and you did it in a quarter of the time. And it was great. I used it for several years there until I got away from Melaleuca, and I've never used it since then. But liquid Brasso helps, you know, a little bit. Put some Brasso in your media, whatever you use. And that speeds things up a little bit. But I like the walnut shells a whole lot better than corn cobman. Okay, well, we've managed already to sneak through here through the first hour. And we got to take another little break here. And I'm going to stretch this one out just a little bit by playing a gun-related thing, because I need some time to put my stuff up since I just got here. And I'll be shortly back.
That's what I said. James is darn good. But he's better. And I'm better than both of them. No brag, just fact.
Now you listen to me. Who the hell are you? You know. You all know exactly who I am. Say my name.
You what? I don't have a damn clue who the hell you are.
Yeah, you do.
That's right.
Now, say my name.
John Galt on the Teotihuacan Radio Show, live Friday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Just Measures Radio Network.
Join us every Sunday for the Medic Shack.
The Emperor has been expecting you.
With your host, Chuck Hudson.
You know what the chain of command is? It's the chain I go get and beat you with till you understand who's in command.
Cat Ellis.
You're having far too much fun at my expense.
And our producer, Jacob Hudson.
Who is this genius?
Sundays, 7 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern, on the Just Measure Radio Network.
For an unarmed public, our nation's worst crime statistics and most horrific recent events have taken place in areas that are known to be no-carry zones for law-abiding citizens. There's a reason schools make such good targets for gun violence. Only the criminal will be armed.
I had to chuckle because then I noticed he had Mr. Brady up here, who was hit not with an assault weapon but with a .22 caliber revolver. So getting beyond that.
It's about the weapons, the guns. Where did the killer get them?
They're shocked at how easy it is to purchase a gun.
It is simply too easy to obtain a firearm.
While the gun is considered an instrument of war by many, to me, it is clearly an instrument of peace and of liberty. The gun promotes peace in the hands of peaceful people. The gun has no mind of its own, it has no morals, and it has no conscience. In the same moment that the gun takes a life, it can be saving one and not be able to distinguish the difference. The gun and its use, for good or for evil, is solely at the discretion of its bearer.
It took me a good 45 seconds to realize that this man wasn't there to commit a robbery. He wasn't there for a hit. He was there to simply shoot as many people as he possibly could.
The gun levels the playing field when confronted by larger men, armed men, multiple attackers, and tyrannical governments. The right of self-preservation, the right to possess that gun, was afforded me by my maker and is non-negotiable. It is not up for consideration or discussion by any man or group of men on this earth. The right to bear arms is what protects my other rights, and considering the source of that right, it cannot and will not be taken away or disguised as some watered-down compromise. rights that man is born with, and has been that way since the dawn of time. The Constitution of the United States enumerates those rights for us, and the protection that it affords us is comforting. However, the Constitution has been ignored, gagged, whisked away to an office full of men that have taken pleasure in violating her, leaving her torn and bleeding, unable to help herself. People that were appointed stewards over her have been neglectful. They have been lured into complacency and have inadvertently turned a blind eye towards this criminal act. We, the people, have been distracted. We were promised safety and protection by the very men that have perpetrated this vile deed. Without the support and protection of free men, dedicated, patriotic Americans, the Constitution is truly nothing more than a piece of paper.
Remember real clear years ago in the swamps of South Georgia? Cane pole and crossman in my hands, all I needed to be growed up. Homemade ice cream and barbecue and the family on Friday nights. 10-lane ram on Saturday right before the morning light. Came a time I was old enough and I learned about the gun. And every night at supper time I answered to what I'd done. Hooks to Dave, I forgot about the way it used to be. They got no respect and no cold steel, just games on TV. A burning hell before I sell my rights away from me. It's high time we embrace the tool that keeps all men free.
We have a message for those that would take our guns away, whomever they may be, from whatever country or whatever unconstitutional faction they may belong to. Please understand that we have had everything taken from us that we are willing to surrender. Some of us have been shooting since before many of you were born. Many of us were trained by the same people that trained you. And some of us, through years of experience, know tricks that they haven't taught you yet. Think of your families and your future with them as we have done. We have decided that our future and that of our children cannot and will not be without freedom. We are willing to die to defend those God-given rights if need be. The question that each of you must ask yourselves, are you willing to die to take them away?
From Hillary Clinton, from Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, from a whole gaggle of numbnuts who would try to tell me they will dictate where, how, and if I can defend myself. I find that preposterous. I find it unacceptable, and I will not accept it. I am a free man. Don't tread on me.
Evenings, 9 p.m. on JMR. Remember, we all are the library for those who come after us.
It was over in a moment and the folks had gathered round. There before them lay the body of the outlaw on the ground. Oh, he might have went on living, but he made one fatal slip when he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. Big iron.
All right, we're back. I think we've about beat the
polishing thing and the dry practice thing to death, so let's move on to something else. By the way, I did, during the break, open up the phone lines. And hang on a minute. Yep, we're good on that. So, you know, I was just looking at a timeline deal here with Jason. And, of course, Glock manufacturing goes back way, way back there. But the it goes back to in 1963 when the Gaston Glock, with the engineer for this company, started with a variety of plastic and steel parts, and their claim to fame was their bonding of this polymer stuff. Of course, the polymer that they used in 1963 is nothing like they have now, or nothing like they had in 1985. But anyway, that's how they got their start. But I didn't know until just now that the Glock knife has been around since the 70s. This was when they started with the first military products, and they started with field knives and training hand grenades, plastic hand grenades, and machine gun belt links that were plastic, or a combination of plastic and steel. So, yeah, Infidel, we'll talk about that here in just a minute. That's a good subject, one of my favorite subjects right there. But I want to go through this here a bit, because this is kind of interesting. I never have really delved into the ancient history of Glock. I knew that they started with curtain rods and machine gun links and stuff like that. I knew that, but I didn't know the knife goes back to 1970. 1980, Glock got a formal invitation from the Austrian Army to develop a new service sidearm. Now, remember, they didn't want a different gun. They wanted a new gun. They wanted something that nobody else had. They wanted to completely redesign something that was simpler, more reliable, easy to clean and take care of, and field strip and all that kind of stuff. So they were tasked with coming up with something brand new. Several companies tried it. Now, the thing that made it easier for Glock to do this is he didn't know a damn thing about guns. He didn't have that knowledge. He wasn't reinventing the wheel and just, reshaping something to make it do the same thing that every other gun has done. The Austrian Army had very specific features that they wanted this gun to have, and the way it was, there wasn't any modern guns at the time that would fill the bill. So in 1981 was when the first semi-automatic Glock service pistol hit the market. Well, it wasn't the market, it was going to the military, but with the polymer receiver, the safe action system, and production started again on a field knife then with a saw. The first field knives had no saw on them. The newer ones and the ones that they still have today do have, and it's a pretty damn aggressive saw too. If you get your finger in the way, it will eat you alive. It is not a good thing to challenge that saw. It works really well. But the Austrian Army then was commissioned, or commissioned Glock to compete in quite a bit of testing here. And at the end of all this competition, contract was awarded to Glock. In 1983, Glock delivered the first order of 30,000 G17 9mm pistols to the Austrian Army. And the same year, the development of the Glock, they call it a spade, we would know it as an entrenching tool. Now, this entrenching tool, I've got one of these. And I'm going to tell you what. That's another thing that has a saw in the handle. You unscrew a cap on the end of the handle, pull a saw out, turn it around, screw the thing back on for a root saw. If you're digging a foxhole or something with it, it was meant for the military. And that saw is brutal. I mean, the way it's built, it is a very, very aggressive saw blade on there. And it's wide enough to be, thick enough to be rugged enough to actually do something with it. And so that tool, that Glock intrenching tool, makes a good contact weapon. It makes a good saw. It makes a good little shovel. Kind of a neat deal. I'm thinking about getting. They're kind of pricey, but I'm thinking about getting two or three more of them for various. I'd like to keep one of them in the truck. I've got one with my militia stuff. But in 1985 is when they started marketing for export, and the first subsidiary in the United States was formed. They had a little bit of a little rocky road getting into the United States. They the durability and everything of the Glock, of course, caught the attention of law enforcement and commercial markets right off the bat. Military, not so much. The in 1987, they come up with the Glock 18, which was the select fire machine pistol, smallest machine pistol in the world at the time. It was an awesome creation there. And another plant was started, another manufacturing plant in 1987. So they were going like gangbusters there in 5 years. They were going nuts. And then another subsidiary was formed in Hong Kong in 1988 to coordinate sales in the Asia and what they call Oceania. And production started then on the Glock 19 and the 17L was the competition pistol. In 89, the demand for Glock was going through the roof and increasing exponentially, and resulted in exports to more than 45 countries worldwide. Special forces, police, military, more than 350,000 pistols have been sold since 1982. 7 years, 350,000 guns sold. And approximately 2,000 police departments at that time were carrying 150,000 of those on duty by 1989. That's pretty awesome. 1990, a third subsidiary was formed in South America to coordinate sales in Latin and Central America and then the Caribbean. That's when production started. What got us looking at this here is we found an old manual that was dated 1990 that had the Glock 17L, 19, 20, 21, 22, and 23, and we were wondering when the 22 and 23 actually came out. So they were, production started on those in 1990. 22 and 23 was the first 40 caliber Glocks to come out. In 91 is when production began on the Glock 20, which is a 10 millimeter, and the 21 was a 45 auto. They came into the series production in the middle of 1991. 94 was the Glock 24, which is 6-inch 40 caliber, and the 24C, which is nothing but a compensated 24. 95, the Glock 25 came out with a 380 auto, and because of the stupid import rules, they were never allowed, and to this day, still not allowed to be imported into the United States. In addition, there in 1995 is when they started working on the Glock 26 and 27, which are what they call the baby Glocks. And that is the C95. That is, in fact, 95, the first one that come to Cody, Wyoming, I snatched up. That was in 1995. I got one of the very first ones to come into the first batch to come into the country. In 96, the Glock 28, which is another 380, still not allowed to be imported into the United States. And also the 17T, which is a training pistol for training people, for marketing and target cartridges. 97, the Glock 29, the Glock 30, that's a 10 millimeter and 45. They call them compact. They call them subcompacts. They're not really. They're certainly smaller than the 20 and the 21, but not nearly what I would call subcompact. They're still pretty beefy guns. And also looked at construction for new headquarters in 1998, 357 SIG, Glock 31, 32, and 33. compensated 31 and 32, and production starts on the 34 and 35, which is the what they call the practical tactical. It's a long slide, but it's not quite 6 inches. They were made specifically for the IPSC crowd, for the IDPA and some of that. But they turned out to be remarkably well accepted in the law enforcement field as well. And I've got two 35s and a 34, and I love all of them very much. Then in 1999, they came out with the Glock 36, which was their, at that time, the one and only single-stack gun that Glock had. And that was in 45 ACP. And then they come out with another training pistol. Now there is a 7.8 by 21 caliber, the Glock 17 TAC. Anyway, the long story behind that. Glock presented at that time in 1999, that would be 10, let's see, since 82, that would be 18 years, its 2 millionth pistol at the SHOT Show in Atlanta, Georgia. 2 millionth pistol in 18 years. In 2000, they started new, they completed their new headquarters. 2001, there were some state laws. Glock started production on models with integrated key locks. Now, I have never seen one of these. I've seen them in catalogs. I think you can still get them. I'm not sure. But they had a deal that you stick into what would be the cavity in the back of the hand grip, and there was a long key that went in there that would disable the gun. It was a stupid idea, but they did it because of certain states wanted, in order for the guns to be legal and accepted in their state, they wanted these stupid locks. And Glock said, okay, you want to be stupid, we'll give you stupid. And then the tactical lights, the Glock tactical lights come out in 2002. Good little lights and extremely affordable compared to some of the other ones. At the same time that these other ones were $125, $180, $200, the Glock ones were selling for $65. Same brightness, same lumen, same bulb, same batteries, but because of their manufacturing process and stuff, they made them substantially cheaper than the average flashlight out there. What are they now? No, it's still cheaper than everything else. So, comparatively speaking, they're still, the price has gone up, but they're still cheaper than all the rest of them. Let's see. Glock introduces complete pistol line, standard compact and subcompact in the 45 Gap. 45 Gap come out in 2004. And a lot of people poo-pooed that Gap, but I'll tell you what, if I was a 45 fan, I'd never go back to a 45, and I've said this a dozen times, I've never changed, never wavered on this. If I went back to a 45 and I knew that ammunition would be available, I would stick with that 45 Gap. I'll tell you one thing about the Gap is it is in everything, every Glock that we shot, subcompact, full-size, whatever, it is a incredibly, remarkably accurate round. We're just amazed at how well that thing shot. In 2006, this was celebrated their 20th year of perfection. Let's see, 1985, export marketing, intensified first. Okay, well, 86 is then when, so I was 4 years wrong, so 14 years for 2 million pistols. Yeah, 2006 would have been 20 years. 2007, they came out with the short frames, the Glock SF. It's not slim frame, as some people call it. It's a short frame. I'm not sure why it was short frame. It should have been slim frame, and it makes sense, and just from a common sense standpoint, then I would say short slim frame would be fine. But that came out in the 45 and the 10 millimeter. Jason has an SF in the 10 millimeter, and Noel, it's 10 millimeter barrel in it. It was a 45 in its other life. And now in 2007, well, then in 2007, 5 million pistols. 5 million in 21 years. That's quite the feat, I think. Production started 2009 on the Gen 4s. 2010, it was, dedicated to continuously pursuing perfection. Doc introduces the Gen 4s in 17, 19, 26, 31, 22, 23, 27, 35, and 37. In 2011, 25 years. So we're now 3 years past that. That's as far as this particular deal goes, so I'm not sure what's going on with it now. But anyway, that was kind of cool. I got to go way back up here now and see how far you guys have outrun me on the chat room here. Let's see. Mark, we're looking at the Rugers here still, and have a little discussion about that. I'm not sure, Dom, I'm not sure if the design struck me as weird. It was different for sure on the Mark IIs. Certainly different, but I don't know if I'd go quite as far as say weird, because it sure does work well. Let's see. The Infidel, there's lots of Mark IIs out there. I'm sure I'd be willing to bet. Well, somebody beat me to it, Casper Mountain. I said I'd be willing to bet if you go to Gun Broker, you can probably find one. When they first came out in, I believe it was 1946, they were about, I think they were $49. Either $49.95 or $46.95. They are way, way, way in the hell past that now. I don't like the Mark IIIs. I don't like the Mark IIIs a little bit. Let's start back with the first part of this. Now I'm doing this strictly from memory here. The Mark I, the first ones that came out, there was two models that came out in several barrel lengths. They were not, there was a standard model, which was one that did not have adjustable sights, and it came out in 4 and 6 inch barrels. And there was the Mark I. The Mark I was the target model with the adjustable sights. And then in, it would have been somewhere in the vicinity of, probably about September 7th, 1977, 77, 79, somewhere in there, they come out with the Mark II. Now, at that time, there was a little confusion over names because all of them were called Mark IIs. There was, now, some people stuck with that, and they called one of them the Mark II standard model, which was the one with the non-adjustable sights, just drift adjustable sights. And but in fact, they were both Mark IIs. There was no standard model after that. Thank you. Jason's gonna. 1949 is when they. Okay, I was right about that. And also, the first ones that came out, if you find some of them, it's the Red Eagle versions. On the grip, the little Ruger Eagle on there, the original ones, first ones were red. And if I recall, when Alexander Sturm died, Bill Ruger changed that to a Black Eagle. So everything prior to Alexander Sturm's death was Red Eagles, if I remember right. And so then there was the Mark II. There was some little subtle changes to the Mark II. One of them is that the it actually had a slide lock on it. It more correctly called a bolt lock, I guess, on that gun. But slide lock on the earlier ones, the first ones, the Mark 1s and the standard models, you lock the slide to the rear by putting by applying the safety. And they had 9-round magazines. The Mark IIs were 10-round magazines. It actually had a slide lock to lock the slide to the rear. And it had some little dish outs in the back of the receiver, which I thought were kind of pointless, but it allowed you, in theory, to get a little better purchase on the back of the bolt when you're chambering around or locking it to the rear. Other than that, internally, they were 100% the same as the very first one that come off the showroom floor. And there was a non-adjustable sight and an adjustable sight, but both of them were Mark IIs. By then, there was 4-inch, 5.5-inch bull barrel, 6-inch standard, 6-inch bull barrel, with or without adjustable sights. There was a 6 and 7/8 inch target barrel. There was a, I don't believe there was ever anything between the 6.5 and the 10. Yeah, no, I don't think there was. The 6 and 7/8, and then it jumped up to a 10.5, and you could not get those in non-adjustable sights. That was strictly adjustable ones. And that kept on there for, what, biggest part of 30 years. And they're just remarkable guns, absolutely astounding guns. It is the, and the things that I like best was, Mountain Shooter says he has a 7-inch government model. I never knew they made such a thing. But the thing that I like best about all the guns that I choose to use are because they're rugged, reliable, and accurate. I mean, that's the only thing I really look for in any of the guns that I have. I want them to work well. I want them to do everything that I want them to do, but I want them to be simple. I want them to be rugged, reliable, and all of that stuff. So, let's see here. I'm checking here, and I'm trying to find, let's see, Mark II Standard, Mark II Target. See, they even call that in the 50th anniversary Mark II Standard. Mark II Standard was the, they had some 4 3/4-inch barrels too. I forgot about those. There's a, well, that wasn't until the 2245s came out though. The Mark IIs were, yeah, I was still right on that. 4-inch, 5.5, 5 1/4, 5.5, 6 7/8, 6 7/8 inch bull. Let's see, government models, 6 7/8, 6 7/8, 5.5. So, Mountain Shooter, if you have a 7-inch, it was either an accident or someone has changed the barrel on it, because it doesn't list one anywhere in the 7-inch. I'm not sure what would benefit from changing their manufacturing processes to gain 1/8 inch, because they all the rest of them were 6 7/8. I'm not a real big fan of the... Well, Mountain Shoe, that's what I'm talking about, is government models. There's lots of government models out there. They made hundreds of them, thousands. And in the book, they don't list any of them as a 7-inch. They're all 6 7/8. So that's why I say yours is maybe a special edition or whatever, but it's not anywhere in the book. The government models were made all in... five, and from what the book says anyway, 5.5 and 6 7/8. So, the military contract were the same, 5.5 and 6 7/8 in the government models. The government model slab side, 6 7/8 only. Let's see, the first government target model, military U.S. marked, 6 7/8 only. Government model, target model, commercial variation of the government model, 6 7/8 only. Manufactured from 1987 to 2004. That was a neat gun, too. It was a little heavier duty. It was quite the target gun. I'd have to say that there's maybe two other semi-automatics that will equal or exceed the accuracy of the Rugers, but Ruger will keep up with just about anything out there. I've reliably, predictably, and cleanly killed animals as small as crows and prairie dogs and stuff out to 125 yards with them. They shoot very well. Jason has taken his with the suppressor on it, which means it has about a 2.5-inch barrel on it, and hit that steel plate out there at 300 yards with his. What kind of group, I don't know. We may go out there and play with that a little bit and see what if he can make an actual group out there with it. But they're just damn sure neat guns. When the Mark III came out, that was the sound of the death knell for the awesome little Rugers. I didn't like the new ones at all. I don't like the 2245s. The 2245s internally were the same as all of the rest of them, but the grip was different. The grip was more like a more like a 1911, more like a 45. And the magazines were different. Grip was different. Safety, I mean, the magazine release was different. I didn't like them. But Wesley has one, and it shoots like a damn rifle, just the same as all the rest of them do. The reliability hasn't changed. The accuracy hasn't changed. I just don't like the guns. If I would still rather have one of those, even though I don't like them, I would still much rather have one of those than a Browning Buckmark or a High Standard. High Standard's a good gun, but they're not as good as the Rugers. One of the things that contributes to the accuracy of that is over most other 22s is that the slide, the sight stays stationary on the barrel in the back of the receiver. The slide is internal, and it fits inside. It's a tubular receiver, and the slide slides inside of that, and that's where all the movement comes from. If you take a High Standard, yeah, they're real accurate until they've been shot the hell out of them, but the front sight doesn't move, but the rear sight does. So at some point, there's got to be enough wear there where the two don't come back into sync properly like they're supposed to. And then there's other ones where both sights move, so the slide moves on the gun just like a 1911 would be, or a Glock or anything else, and both sights are attached to the slide. So that's one thing that has made the Ruger, nothing moves. It's all solid. It's all one piece. The bolt is inside the receiver, and the sights stay stationary. So that's a very, very good thing, I think. Mark II magazines for $50. That's what were we selling our last Mark II magazines for, Jason? You remember? $27 is about what they were, the last ones that we had. The Mountain Shooter, the old Model 41, was one of the two guns that I would say would outshoot the Rugers. The Model 41, of course, it was designed as a target gun to start with. It's also $1,400 retail. Yeah, they're $1,400, but they're, it's compared to, $250 to $300 for the Well, the Mark IIs are gone now, but the gun shows in. Let's see, you can buy all of them. Yeah, $28 or so. That's about right. His Aviator. That's pretty close. The Mark IIIs. Several things that I didn't like about the Mark IIIs. I don't like the loaded chamber indicator a little bit. It's out in the way. It's sharp, and it sticks out there. It's a it's a menace to society, if you ask me. I don't like the magazine release on it. I've gotten so used to the other ones, and I can whip those magazines out and change them just in the blink of an eye. And it's now remember, this is a strictly a personal preference. It's not that it's not good. It's just that I don't like it. Well, the loaded chamber indicator is not good. I don't like it a damn bit. But we've gone right through our break. We're just going to go continue on. I ain't going to mess with the break here. We'll talk about this for a few more minutes and then sign off here. Let's see. What else? Jason, what else was about the Bark 3s? There was something else. Oh, thank you very much.
The
Mark 3s. Thou shalt not buy a Mark 3 if you have any possible choice because they have magazine disc. I despise magazine disconnects. I think that is just about one of the dumbest things that you can put on a handgun, any gun. Matter of fact, I know for a fact a kid, and I've told you this story before, it's been a long time. That was a kid that got killed in Cody, Wyoming, or killed himself in Cody, Wyoming. His dad had a another handgun that had a magazine disconnect, and they said, okay, it's fine. You can do whatever you want to with the gun because I got the magazines. You can't hurt yourself. So without proper training, this kid thinks that all guns have a magazine disconnect, so he goes with his girlfriend over to a party one night. They're sitting on the tailgate of the truck. Somebody has a Luger and a P-38, not a P-38, what the hell was the, anyway, it was a Luger, not a P-38. And he thought he'd be cute, so he pulls the magazine out of it, knowing that it wouldn't go off, stuck it up to his head and pulled the trigger and splattered his brains all over his girlfriend's lap. So there is a very stupid, ignorant mistake, being foolish, smart aleck. A lot of people affected by that. Of course, his own family for his death. And you think that girl's not going to be affected by having his literally, not figuratively, absolutely being sprayed, splattered with his brains. I'm sure that she will never get over that. So, you know, that's, was it the manufacturer's fault? No, not really. I mean, it was, it's the lawyer's fault for coming up with him, but it's because they didn't have the proper training. His Aviator magazine disconnect, Browning High Powers have magazine disconnects. It means that if you, and quite a few of them do, actually, you pull the magazine out and it, disconnects everything. The trigger won't work. You can't operate the gun. You can't, if you're in the middle of a tactical reload and you have to fire that last shot, I'm sorry about that, but you're going to die. Hopefully you've got a tactical pig sticker or something with you. But anyway, no, but you can't fire the last shot in the gun if the magazine's not in it. So if you, technically speaking, if you take a handgun, even if you're down to a single shot and you have to lock the slide to the rear and drop one in, at least you have a single shot. If you lose the magazine, if you lose the magazine for one that has a magazine disconnect, you're done. Thou shalt not shoot anymore. Now you take the magazine disconnect out of a Browning High Power and the trigger immediately gets better. It's a whole lot better. All you got to do is take the magazine disconnect out, and it's much better. A little bit of work in that, and it's a much better trigger on it. So I'm not a fan of that. So those are the things that I dislike the most of the Mark III's. That's why I am so reluctant. You know, I wouldn't, I know the Mountain Shooter, I mean Infidel, I know is looking for a Mark II, and I thought, well, I'll sell him one of mine, I'll pick up another one. I thought, hell no, I won't either. He can go pound sand, he can find his own damn Mark II. Because they are hard to find and they are very expensive now. But Infidel, if you want to give me $1,000 for one of mine, I'd take one for the team, and I'd let you have one of them for $1,000. the Mark II magazines won't work in the Mark IIIs at all. If you take a Mark I magazine and you take the little button on the side and put it on the other side, they'll work in the Mark IIs. Huh? Yeah, that's what you told me the other day, but I'll assure you that you can. Maybe some of the early ones, but I've got two of them that you can. I know, but you still take that pin, take it all the way down, pull that pin out, and put it on the other side. Well, you got one down here? But boy, I got two of them, and they both will. Doc undercut me $999. So, okay. $998.50 is my final offer. What is a 6 7/8 inch government target model worth? Well, I can tell you what it is in our. But I think this is our most recent book. Well, this is not. It's not the most recent book. Let's see here. What was you talking about? The 6 7/8 inch government model. Well, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 versions. No, 4 versions of the 6 7/8 inch target model. We'll rule that one out because it was a foreign military contract. There was a competition slab side. They were discontinued in 2004. Discontinued 2009. When this book came out, the most expensive one here was $600. They're much more than that now. The Mark II magazine, I think, will work in the Mark I, his aviator, but you will have to turn the button around. The little button that you push to compress the spring to load it out. Ruger makes it's a great idea with those little buttons on there. Of course, High Standard did the same thing, but you push the thing all the way down. That you want to take a little wooden dowel or something and hold the magazine follower down, pull that little button, that little assisting button out of there, and turn it around and put it on the other side, and it should work in your other gun. But the Infidel, I think I'm pretty sure you're correct that the because of the way the magazines are held in there, the Mark IIs won't work in the Mark III. I'm not absolutely positive. Yeah, Jason says they will not. So, yeah, they latch completely differently. So, all of the Mark I's and Mark II's and standard models all had a European style release in the bottom of the grip, and then the Mark III's, they come out with this stupid ingenious idea that they need to make it like a conventional semi-automatic and put it on the left side of the frame so that you can hit it with your thumb. And which it was probably very disappointing to the Southpaws out there. With the latch on the bottom, it was equally convenient whether you're shooting right-handed or left-handed. It didn't make any difference. It was just as fast, just as easy, made no difference at all. So, okay, I see what you're saying, Casper Mountain. I'm not sure about that either, Infidel, but I'm sure you should stay away from the Mark III unless you just don't have a choice. Let's go look since we have a few minutes here. Let's go here and check on something. We'll just nip this in the bud here right now. Let's see, log in. Okay, we're doing good so far. 4th of July, if any of you guys are planning on coming down, be sure and let me know. If you're going to need a room, you better let me know in a hurry because there's only 3 left. And all we're planning on doing, nothing real formal. We're planning on dinking around a little bit, bring a few bucks with you. Not everything's going to be 100% free, but there's not going to be anything that you have to pay for if you don't want to do it. There'll be some survival classes going on and stuff that's going to cost a little bit. I have no authority over that, no option, so that's what it'll have to be. All right, let me see. We're having a little bit of problem here. We're experiencing technical difficulties. Come on. Chop, chop. Well, you know, Worky. Okay. Well, I had a real good idea here. All right. Maybe it wasn't such a great idea. Well, let's see here. Let's change that to that. See what happens. Wow, we really are messing things up here. All right, there we go. All right, we're in like Flint. Now then, categories. We're going to see just exactly how many Mark IIs are available and what they cost. Okay. Come along, little doggy. There's a Mark I. 14 minutes left on the auction, $425. 6 7/8 inch heavy tapered barrel. It has the red insignia, the red eagle on it. Here's a custom, here you go, Infidel. A custom Ruger Mark II for $400. It looks to be stainless. Not a bad price. Ruger Mark II, 50th anniversary, 22 long rifle, 4-inch, with the box of 22s. How about that? $299. No, $299. Yeah, with the box of 22s, it goes up to $850. Let's see here. Ruger Mark II, 22 long rifle, 5.5-inch bull barrel, lots of extras. This is a deal right here. There's another one there, $216. Man, there's tons of them on here. What are you talking about? You can't find one. You're just too damn lazy to run the computer. Push the buttons, man. Okay, Ruger Mark II, target stainless, 22 long rifle pistol, many extras. Configured with the heavy 5.5-inch bull barrel, comes both factory and comfortable rubber Packmire grips, B-square scope mount, Tasco Pro Point red dot scope, 3 magazines. Mark IIs were discontinued too. This is a deal, son. This, you ought to jump on this. Here's a phone number for you. Call them first thing in the morning, 281-414-7493 if you have any questions. That means that they will take it off the auction if you call and want to buy it, probably. If the buyer is in Texas, you need to add 8.25. All right, let's go. This is intriguing. I'm going to go look at some more here. Here's one Ruger Mark II target model, adjustable sights, $216, buddy. There are so many of the. Here's a 10-inch stainless. There's one, $575. Mark II competition target with Leopold scope, $675. Ruger Mark I. Ah, they're going to fight over this one. It's got a reserve on it. You'll have to fight for that. Ruger Mark II, $459. No reserve. You got lots and lots and lots of choices here. Here's one's up to $275. Two bidders on it. It's got 4 days left on it. So let me put this link in the chat room for you. Ruger Mark, here's a good one. It's up to $425. Well, there's a reserve on it, so it's that's the one that ends in 14 minutes. Right now, there are no bids on it. One bid on this other one. There's I think you can find you one that will suit your needs there for probably $400 or less. Let me see what you're watching there, Infidel. Okay. Buy now for $600. What all has it got with it? Seller of this item assumes all responsibility. Character Ruger Mark II. It says barrel length 7 inches, not 7 inches. It's 6 7/8. There is no such thing as a 7 inch. Purchased 12 years ago. Shot it a few times. It slowly sank into the dark part of my safe. Never been around. Right down below there, it does say 6 7/8. So I think they screwed up on the first one there. Shipping's way too high on this. But nevertheless, if you want one, that sounds like a damn fine one to get right there. And that 6 7/8 inch target barrel on that Ruger, buddy, if you can do your part, and I know you can, I've watched you shoot, you will be most and duly impressed with the accuracy of that. Yeah, those 8 magazines, you're talking about 250-300 worth of magazines there. So, not a bad deal. All right, well, we've had all the fun we can stand for today, I think. So, we'll be back, bring you Liberty Lounge right here from Shots Ranch tomorrow. And I'm going to scoot on out of here. I got things to do, places to go, and people to see. So, thanks for helping me muddle through this tonight with no preparation whatsoever. I sat down here as the intro was playing. I told Jason, I said, how are we going to get through? I have no earthly idea what I'm going to talk about. But y'all pulled through for me and gave us some hints and worked out fine. So I'll see you tomorrow.
A gun will travel, reach the car of a man. A knight without armor in a savage land. His fast gun for hire heeds the calling wind. A soldier of...
Okay, that about wraps it up for another PM edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me every Thursday night for 2 hours of 99 and 44 100% pure gun talk. Good night.
A chestnut of silver is his badge of trust. There are campfire legends that the flames men spin of the man.